This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello, welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Nabil Biagio, and here's what's coming up.
Tigrayan forces from Ethiopia's northern region have said they are prepared to participate in an immediate cessation of hostilities, followed by peace talks mediated by the African Union.
That's reporter Fred Harder on a ceasefire proposal by Tigrayan forces in Ethiopia. All this and more coming up on Africa News Tonight. Many academics and social commentators say Africans should use the death of Queen Elizabeth to reflect on the enduring physical and mental effects of British colonialism. The United Kingdom, of which the Queen was the figurehead, was one of the great imperial powers. It colonized much of Africa, including today's continental economic powerhouses of South Africa, Kenya, and Nigeria. Darren Taylor reports.
African politicians spent the weekend showering tributes and compliments on Elizabeth, who ruled Britain for 70 years. It's expected that leaders from the 21 African members of the British Commonwealth will attend her funeral. Thousands of Africans have used social media to pay their respects to Elizabeth, with many tweeting that she was the Queen of Queens. Lebogang Peko is a social researcher and political economist at the African Trade Collective think tank, which focuses on pan-African issues.
The very fact that we say the royal family, the queen, centers that as a form of, I guess, white normativity and British normativity, that there's the one monarch and then all others are subservient to that. And I think that we should reflect on what this means for us and what that says about us and the imprint of colonialism on our psyches, in our languaging, in our vocabulary.
Peko points out there are many kings and queens in Africa, but none as revered as Elizabeth was.
It's also almost impossible to get away from historicizing the role of the British royal family in previous and ongoing atrocities. So, I mean, for example, the Commonwealth, which is the vestiges of former colonized states. And it really does seem to keep on enforcing the notion there must be a center and that that center is a British imperial center.
One of Africa's biggest trade partners, Britain argues it's done much to atone for colonialism. Every year it provides billions of dollars in aid and investment to the continent. That's great, says Peko, but the UK government and royal family have never apologized for their country's toxic history of slavery in Africa. She points out the UK used resources from its colonies to build what's today the fifth largest economy in the world. And it was all done in the name of successive kings and queens.
They extracted about $47 trillion during the colonial period just from India alone. Every time one sees the late Queen of England, as it were, wearing that crown, remember the diamond that was stolen in South Africa, which is worth $400 million US. And there haven't been any conversations whatsoever about when these jewels are going to be returned. And they're just taken as being owned by the crown. They are stolen goods. So whilst I appreciate...
Peko says the Queen's death is a reminder that many Africans aren't free from the chains of colonialism.
We can't really get away from how far-reaching this imprint is. It goes beyond the fact that so many of our own suburbs here, even here in South Africa, across Zimbabwe, across Swaziland, Botswana, Nairobi, bear these very British Anglophile identities. Queen Elizabeth Bridge, for example.
She says she doesn't buy the argument that Elizabeth and other royals could not have at least condemned the horrors committed in the name of their family.
The crown has a lot of power, and I don't think that we should act as though they're just these little wax figures that are sitting inside Madame Tussauds, helplessly smiling and waving. They certainly have voice, and they certainly can wield that voice.
Many across Africa now want the new king, Charles III, to be that voice, to have the courage to issue a formal apology for British imperial atrocities that happened in service of the crown. And, says Peko, maybe it's time for the House of Windsor to also return a few African diamonds. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
A Nigerian international affairs expert says new British monarch King Charles III will steer the affairs of the Commonwealth well. The expert says Charles is familiar with the Commonwealth countries and has personal relationships with some of its leaders. Charles became the British monarch and the new head of 54 Commonwealth nations following the death of his mother, Queen Elizabeth, on September the 8th. David Awarawo is a professor of international relations and strategic studies at the University of Lagos. He is also the head of the school's Department of History and Strategic Studies.
Well, we expect that the new British monarch, that's King Charles III, will steer the affairs of the Commonwealth very well, the way the mother did for so many years, for 70 years. We are confident that King Charles III will be able to steer the affairs of the Commonwealth well, because he's very familiar with all the Commonwealth countries, and even a personal relationship with many of the Commonwealth leaders. You recall that a couple of years ago, Queen Elizabeth II reduced her engagements, and Prince Charles, as he then was, represented her in many international activities, including at the Commonwealth. So King Charles III is well familiar with the workings of the Commonwealth and the importance of the Commonwealth as well. With all of that, we are confident that King Charles III will do well to steer the affairs of the Commonwealth in a manner that, you know, will continue to benefit the United Kingdom, the, you know, initiator of the Commonwealth, and the other Commonwealth countries as well, who have remained steadfast to the organization because of the benefits they have derived from the organization over the years.
King Charles is known to be active in climate change and an environmental advocate. Sir, do you think, or do you see him abdicating these responsibilities? Yes. And how beneficial will it be to the Commonwealth nations and indeed African countries?
I heard it. Okay, you are talking about the environmental activism and commitment of
climate change. Yes, sir.
Yes, and climate change, whether he will continue the advocacy, or you will give it up. That's king. What I think is this. I think he will remain committed to, you know, issues having to do with the environment, climate change, environmental protection. But he will not be as, as active and vociferous as he has been on the issue because of his new role as, you know, the British monarch. But I don't see him abandoning the commitment to environmental protection entirely. It is just that I don't expect us to hear his voice as firmly as, you know, and loudly as we have done in the past couple of decades that he has been committed to these causes. In any case, environmental protection and tackling the climate change are also issues of global concern. And so if a leader of the United Kingdom, a prominent, you know, global figure, is making comments about environmental protection, it will not be out of place with his position as the British monarch. I expect him to remain committed to issues of environmental protection and the ways and means of tackling climate change.
That was David Awarawo, Professor of International Relations and Strategic Studies at the University of Lagos, speaking with reporter Mike Mbonye. Ethiopia's Tigrayan forces called for an immediate ceasefire yesterday and said they would join an African Union-led peace process after 3 weeks of renewed fighting ended a fragile truce. Fred Harder reports from Addis Ababa, Ethiopia.
Tigrayan forces from Ethiopia's northern region have said they are prepared to participate in an immediate cessation of hostilities, followed by peace talks mediated by the African Union. In a statement to mark the beginning of the Ethiopian New Year, the Tigray region's leadership called for a comprehensive negotiated ceasefire and said they had established a negotiating team that is ready to be deployed without delay. The government of Tigray is prepared to participate in a robust peace process under the auspices of the African Union, the statement said. The statement came as heavy fighting was reported along Tigray's northern, eastern and southern borders. The latest round of hostilities erupted on the 24th of August, bringing an end to a ceasefire agreed by the parties in late March. Each side blamed the other for starting the fighting. Thousands have been killed and millions displaced since the conflict broke out in November 2020. The Tigray forces have previously rejected the African Union as a mediator, claiming its peace envoy, former Nigeria President Olusegun Obasanjo, is too sympathetic to Ethiopia's federal government, and expressing a preference for talks in Nairobi overseen by Kenya and the US. Their call for a ceasefire was welcomed by the AU, the European Union and the United Nations. On Thursday, the UN said the fighting has halted much-needed aid deliveries to Tigray and war-affected parts of the neighbouring region of Amhara. The AU chairperson described the ceasefire call as a unique opportunity towards the restoration of peace in the Federal Democratic Republic of Ethiopia, while the EU Foreign Affairs head, Josep Borrell, said the EU was ready to support talks. Ethiopia's federal government has not yet responded to the statement from the Tigray region's leadership, but it has previously said it is ready to participate in AU-led talks anytime, anywhere, while also questioning the Tigray forces' commitment to resolving the conflict through dialogue. Fred Harter for VOA News, Addis Ababa, Ethiopia.
U.S. President Joe Biden has named a presidential delegation to attend the presidential inauguration of William Samoei Arap Ruto tomorrow in Nairobi. Catherine Tai, United States Trade Representative, will lead the delegation. Its members include Meg Whitman, the U.S. Ambassador to the Republic of Kenya, and Colin Allred, a member of the U.S. House of Representatives from the state of Texas. Kenya is a U.S. ally. In 2021, Biden announced that he'd sent American special troops to Kenya to help with counterterrorism efforts. In December, Ruto and about 50 other Africa leaders are expected to join a U.S.-Africa summit in Washington. Somalia's military says an offensive in the central Hiran region has captured 20 villages that were occupied by the Islamist militant group Al-Shabaab. Mohamed Deysan reports from Mogadishu, Somalia.
A Somali National Army commander, Captain Mohamed Ibrahim Dawood, told VOA by phone Monday that armed troops backed by armed locals have killed more than 100 Al-Shabaab fighters and also liberated 20 villages from the Al-Qaeda-affiliated group. He said the retaken villages include several key locations in Hiran region, including the small town of Fido, near Somalia's border with Ethiopia. Dawood said troops captured another 20 militants alive. He acknowledged that the army received air support during the operations without naming a country. It is true that the army has been getting eye cover from our partners during the operations. He says the operations continue and we are just in their remnants now. In a statement issued Sunday night, Somali Information Ministry said the operations were the first step in implementing the government's vision of fighting terrorism and getting rid of Al-Shabaab all over the country. The Somali government is committed to remove Al-Shabaab as a threat to the Somali people, the statement said. Abdul Karim Abdulle is a Mogadishu-based independent security analyst. He tells VOA via WhatsApp that local militias are now determined to work with the security forces to eliminate Al-Shabaab in the regions. He says the Ma'wisley, referring to local militia, is something that Somali government encouraged in the population and they decided to take part and liberate themselves from Al-Shabaab. And it is something that is very important. Without them, he says, the operations can't succeed. Al-Shabaab did not comment on the government's claims, but it said it had carried out a series of bomb attacks in Hiran region, targeting Somali security forces. Hassan Sheikh Mahmoud, who is serving his second term as Somalia's president, last month declared a total war against Al-Shabaab after the group staged a deadly hotel siege in the capital Mogadishu that killed 21 people and wounded more than 100 others. Mohamed Daisane for VOA News, Mogadishu, Somalia.
On the 21st anniversary of the September 11th attacks on the United States, Americans gathered to mark the date and mourn those lost. Marcus Harden has the story.
President Joe Biden laid a wreath Sunday at the Pentagon just outside Washington, where 184 people were killed when a hijacked jet hit the building. He acknowledged the grief experienced by families of those lost and pledged to keep the United States vigilant against future attacks.
No terrorist could touch the wellspring of American power, and it falls to us to keep it safe on behalf of all those we lost 21 years ago, on behalf of all those who have given their whole souls to the cause of this nation every day since. That's a job for all of us.
In New York City, Vice President Kamala Harris and her husband, Second Gentleman Doug Emhoff, attended a ceremony at a memorial plaza where the World Trade Center Twin Towers once stood.
Jaime Concepcion.
Albert Conde.
Families read aloud names of the victims, pausing for moments of silence at the time of day when airliners struck the two towers, claiming nearly 3,000 lives. Diane Massaroli's husband, Michael, worked on the 101st floor of the North Tower.
Oh, he was the best person ever, best dad, best father, best husband, you know, hardworking, loved to bowl, just like an awesome. That's why I go every year and I hold up his picture, even with people that never knew him, just to know him and remember his face. Because he was a life, you know, that was worth something.
My cousin, Louis Joseph Nagy II. Joey.
At the Flight 93 National Memorial in Shanksville, Pennsylvania, First Lady Jill Biden spoke, reflecting on the airline passengers who brought their hijacked plane down, thwarting an intended attack on Washington.
So as we stand on this sacred and scarred earth, a record of our collective grief and a monument to the memories that live on in us each day. This is the legacy we must carry forward. Hope that defies hate. Love that defies loss. And the ties that hold us together through it all.
Other communities around the country conducted observances, including candlelight vigils, interfaith services, and other commemorations. Marcus Harton, VOA News.
The Global Fund is seeking $18 billion to save millions of lives in the fight against HIV, tuberculosis, and malaria. The fund, which is made up of governments, multilateral agencies, and other stakeholders, says over the past 20 years, more than 50 million lives have been saved from the three diseases. The consortium will hold a replenishment conference hosted by U.S. President Joe Biden next week in New York. The French news agency AFP says spokespersons for the global partnership say the new funding, which covers funding through 2026, could cut deaths by two-thirds and save 20 million lives. Health experts say progress in fighting the three diseases has been hampered by the COVID pandemic and food shortages caused by the war between Ukraine and Russia. They say malnutrition weakens the ability of afflicted people to fight disease and respond to treatment or prevention efforts. The fund says, however, that a rapid scale-up in programs has allowed the treatment programs to recover lost ground and further its aim to end the three diseases by 2020. By 2030. A report presented at the opening of the 51st session of the UN Human Rights Council paints an alarming picture of growing abuse and violence in all regions of the world, with few rays of hope for a peaceful resolution. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
Acting High Commissioner for Human Rights, Nada Al-Nashif, highlighted the growing desperation of millions of people trapped in a never-ending cycle of human rights violations, violence, and political instability in dozens of countries around the world. She addressed the worsening situation in numerous countries in Africa, including Burkina Faso, Burundi, the Central African Republic, and Mali. She offered a rare glimmer of hope regarding the nearly two-year-old conflict in northern Ethiopia's Tigray province.
Following the recent resumption of hostilities in northern Ethiopia, I am encouraged by the announcement yesterday by authorities in Tigray of their readiness to abide by an immediate cessation of hostilities and to participate in a robust peace process under the auspices of the African Union. I urge the parties to take immediate steps to end the violence once and for all, and to opt for constructive and genuine dialogue.
She dwelled at length on the unbearable levels of violence and human rights abuses by heavily armed gangs in Haiti. She called on the international community to help contain the scourge of violence in that country. However, she made only passing reference to China's incarceration of more than a million Uyghur and other Muslim minorities in so-called vocational centers. This is despite growing demands by human rights activists for a special debate on this issue at the Council.
On 31 August, my office published its assessment of human rights concerns in the Xinjiang Uyghur Autonomous Region of China with recommendations to the government and other stakeholders.
Acting High Commissioner Al-Nashif was more robust in her criticism of Russia's actions aimed at quelling domestic opposition to its war in Ukraine.
In the Russian Federation, the intimidation, restrictive measures and sanctions against people voicing opposition to the war in Ukraine undermine the exercise of constitutionally guaranteed fundamental freedoms. Pressure against journalists, blocking of internet resources, and other forms of censorship are incompatible with media pluralism and violate the right to access of information.
Al-Nashif said the war in Ukraine continues and the suffering of the civilian population continues. She noted the serious socioeconomic consequences of the war also persist. This, she said, has resulted in severe fuel shortages and threats to food security in some of the world's poorest countries. She added the devastation caused by the war in Ukraine will be discussed later in the session. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
The French news agency AFP says three UN peacekeepers were injured by a roadside bomb in northern Mali yesterday. The UN stabilization mission to the country, known as MINUSMA, says its vehicle hit an improvised explosive device along the 8-kilometer road between the villages of Ber and Timbuktu. The international force, which was established 9 years ago, has more than 17,000 troops, police, civilians, and volunteers. AFP notes that more than 175 of the troops have died in attacks by extremists, more fatalities than any other peacekeeping operation. And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Nabil Biagio in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. On behalf of engineer Zainab Abdulrahman and producer Nadia Taha, thank you for tuning in and for choosing The Voice of America.
Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Balance it. Like to stay on top of new music trends? Breakout.